Welcome to the Small Business Podcast with David Michaels and Daniel Miller. This week, we're going to be going and delving into the basics of economics. Why? Because we did some show prep and talked about some of the issues that we saw in our basic surroundings. But first, David, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. How are you, Daniel?
Well, I just got back from a cruise, and it was fantastic, let me tell you.
Well, I would hope so. That's what cruises are for.
Yes, I just came back, and I'm going to do a plug for a company. We just did the Carnival cruise, 3-day cruise, down to the Bahamas. We went snorkeling and then came back. The waiting staff did a fantastic job on the Sensation, and I was telling the waiting staff that it was very difficult to come back to normal land because the people on board the ship spoil you by just taking better care of you than you do at normal restaurants.
Good.
So with that, David, let's go ahead and delve into the basics of economics. As you may know, there's some reasons why we have this thing, but let me go ahead and explain it to our listeners. This week, David and I both encountered different situations where we realized that supply and demand curves are a little out of whack. And whether or not you know this, all of economics is dictated by supply and demand curves. Now, there are some people who go and try and cheat those, but they end up coming back to them anyway. So those of you who don't know what a supply and demand curve is, I'm going to cover what supply is, and David's going to cover demand. First off, supply. Actually, no. Let's let you talk, David.
Okay.
What's demand?
Demand is really simply how much people want whatever you're offering. That's really all there is to it. You want me to keep going?
If you don't mind.
Okay. I like to keep it simple. So basically, Daniel offers his tire paint.
Ooh.
See, we're going to apply it to something real life here. Okay, no more theory. So Daniel's got his tire paint. I'm just going to go through, because it's easier to explain them in relative to each other, okay? You mind?
That's no problem, David.
Okay, so Daniel has a certain amount of supply of this tire paint, how much raw material he used to make this stuff, and he made so many cans of this paint. We'll say he's got 10,000 in his warehouse, and because his business is doing really good, and he's got a good investor and all that kind of stuff. So he's up and running. He's ready to go. He's got extra 10,000 supply. Demand is how many people out there want it. So if he has 10,000 cans of tire paint and 1,000 people are willing to buy tire paint, he's got a problem. The demand is much lower than the supply. In contrast, if he has 100,000 people who want this stuff and only 10,000 cans, he's got the opposite issue, a good problem, where he's got way more people who want to buy it than he has inventory for. What the supply and demand curve is the happy middle. It's where you have just the right amount of product for just the right amount of people who want it. And the interesting thing is what we're going to be talking about on the show here, is you can actually manipulate the supply and demand curve where they meet by adjusting the price, knowing that some people will want your product at a certain price and maybe not for a higher price. So if you've got a higher supply, if he's got 10,000 cans and only 1,000 people wanting to buy it, he can lower his price and increase a number of demand, and now he might have 12,000 people wanting it at a lower price point, and now he can go through all his inventory and still make a profit instead of having a bunch of dead inventory.
That's right. And so it's just a matter of figuring that out. And a good example of that I have is not just the tire paint, but also when I was doing the Beer Pong Association of America work. And I was trying to figure out that the cost of the products that I was selling was about $19, and no one was buying it at the $26 level. They were actually buying it at the $15 level. So that causes a little bit of trouble in supply and demand curves.
Right. Sometimes you need to either lower your costs or get into another business.
And guess what I did?
You went into a better business.
I went into a different business. And that one actually turns a profit. And who knew that if you go ahead and realize that you had some mistakes, you go ahead and admit you've made those mistakes, you can move on to something better, maybe if not better, maybe just a more profitable industry. You just need to be able to realize that, hey, this is not going well.
Right.
Well, with that said, David, could you go ahead and give us an idea of how you would go about setting those prices?
Well, there's a few different ways you can kind of test the market and see what...
That's what I'm looking for a phrase. Test the market, that's good.
Test the market, thank you. To see what people feel is a good price value for what you're offering, what they're willing to pay for your product or service. And some people do, questionnaires and surveys like, here's our product, try it out, would you be willing to pay this much for it, that much for it, or this other much for it? I have mixed feelings about that. In my opinion, and this is just my opinion, I think in real life people will pay a little bit more than they say they will on paper. Just because of impulse buy, or because of effective marketing, or because everyone else has it and they don't want to be left out, or just you seem more professional because you're in a retail store now, so they're willing to pay more because, hey, you're established. You're not just some fly-by-night new business. So there's all kinds of emotional, psychological factors that come into play, too. But that's one way to test for it. You also can do an auction, which now with the internet is great. You can reach a large number of people very cheaply. Try something on like eBay, for example, Or you could try Craigslist isn't really an option, an auction, but it is an option you can use where you could say, here, I'm selling this service at this point, at this price point, but let me see how much response I get. And if you get a lot of people interested, you might be charging too little. If you get nobody interested, you're charging too much. You want to get the happy middle where you have some people interested at a decent profit for you.
Sorry, David. I just want to go and echo what you're saying about the eBay bidding or the auctioning. Mm-hmm. He said that's a great way to get a first idea of how much you can actually sell a product for. You may have an idea of how much you're going to manufacture it for. If you make about two or three of them, you can then test the price point and say, hey, look, I think I can sell this Beer Pong Association of America stuff for $25. Do I think I'll get that? And had I done that on eBay, I would have been able to figure out that no one is bidding it up to anything more than $15.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that would have been a good thing to go ahead and say, wow, maybe I shouldn't be going and buying products that are going to make this whole thing cost $25. Maybe I should adjust the price point to being $20 or $15. And
right.
Adjust the entire product to make it, or don't go into it at all.
And eBay is not your only option either. There's several auction type websites out there. I don't know them off the top of my head because I don't really use them much. But I just bought a textbook for school off of eBay though, at a fraction of the cost the bookstore was asking.
Did you buy it from another individual?
Yes.
And did you look around online to see what other people were selling it for?
Yes.
And you decided your own price point?
I did my research because I needed this textbook for class, and I use a great website called bookfinder.com, which checks a whole bunch of online places that are selling new and used copies of the book you're looking for. You just plug in the title or ISBN, something like that, and it'll bring up, just list it and sort it by price, order, and everything. It's a beautiful website. Simplifies life very much. And there was one that was being auctioned on eBay for a certain price, because I went to the campus bookstore, which for the most part was the most expensive. Not in every case, but usually. And then there was the off-campus bookstore, whose primary method of advertising was saying we're cheaper than the campus bookstore.
Yeah.
And for most of them, they were a little bit cheaper. Not a whole lot, but a little bit. And then I started searching all these other websites, like through bookfinder.com, and those were usually even cheaper. And one of them was an auction on eBay, and I put a little bid on it, and then like a day before the bid expired, someone outbid me, and I'm like, oh, I should have just... But it started getting more and more expensive to where it's like, okay, I can get this cheaper on another website at this point. So I let it go. I let the other person win. But I thought, I wonder if anyone else on eBay is doing this that didn't get caught on the Bookfinder website. And sure enough, there was another copy of the exact same book auctioning at the exact same time for less money, a lower starting bid, and no one else bid on it. So I emailed the guy. I'm like, is there any way I can buy this now? I need it right away. And I didn't want this to happen again where someone outbids me. But he said, no, but, it's almost expired anyway. Just bid and hope for the best, and I'll get it right out to you if you win. So I put in the minimum bid. No one else bid. I want it, and paid for it real quick, and he said I'll ship it out Monday. So that's great. That took care of that. But I ended up paying about, with shipping and handling, about $18-$19, and that's shipped. When the book was selling everywhere else for $30 for the lowest used online to, I think, about $60 or so used at the bookstore. So I got a good deal on that one.
But that's good, because you're able to figure out what price you wanted for it. And when I go on Amazon, it's basically my open-ended supply and demand curve, because I'm always looking for, do I want to have a book as cheap as possible, but I also want to have one that's not raggedy. As soon as I buy it and it comes to me, I don't want it falling apart. So I have to find somewhere in between, in the middle. So it's a matter of figuring it all out. And I don't know how you've dealt with it, but my policy is I need to find it so I don't get something that's going to fall apart on me as soon as I open it up.
Yeah, and that was one thing I checked. You know, they described the condition of it and stuff. And, like, it had a little crease on it or something. It's like, I don't care. You know, as long as it's overall in good condition and I can read it and use it for class, that's all I need. So what a lot of this does for you, just to bring it all together, is it'll give you a range of what people are willing to pay and what's the most you can get for it based on the number of inventory out there. Now, a popular book, you got a lot higher supply and fewer people demanding it, so I was able to get it cheaper. If this was a rare book and everyone needed a copy, well, that's why campus bookstores are able to charge a lot more for these textbooks. They control the supply. They know you need it. High demand, high price.
And that's way you can set your own price as a customer. I mean, not as a customer, but as a seller. Is that way you can find out how much does someone want for my product? How much are they willing to bid for it? And then, you can set your price for it. Another way you can do that is by bartering.
Yes.
Not bartering. What's it called when you bargaining with someone? Is that you go ahead and have someone come to you and say, hey, how much do you want for this? Tell them $11 billion. And they say, great, I'll offer you $12 for it. And then you say, well, how about 19? And then the guy goes, well, maybe 14. That's my final offer. And then you say, $16? They go, sold.
And now you've determined your price.
And now you have an idea of, well, this is what the person wanted it at, so I can work from there. And so that you can do that in kind of a workaround way. If you go on something like eBay, you can do it by just adjusting your buy it now price. Or you can do it on Amazon, setting different prices for different people. I know that Google, if you do some stores through them, they allow you to change out the prices for basically people coming from different areas. You can adjust the price, so you don't have one price showing up to someone. I know Amazon does that too, where they say that if you come in there, they'll charge a higher price to some people for the exact same price they'll charge someone else a cheaper value for. And that's how they are able to determine what prices they use. I hope I'm not giving away any internal secrets for everybody and spoiling the magic for you, but these companies are using your website ID to adjust how you look to them. Freak
Absolutely.
Out, everybody. So one of the things I recommend to people when they go to Amazon is that you clear out your cookies. So they have to start every single time over with trying to figure out who you are and offer you the best price. But that's just my personal opinion and recommendation. So, David, are there any other ways that you could adjust your supply and demand curve?
Well, one easy way, which is pretty common sense, but it's worth mentioning, you could afford very little profit on each item if you do huge sales volumes.
Sort of what Walmart does.
Exactly. Walmart is a perfect example where they're just selling inventory like crazy all over the place. They're creating more value for the customers, which is driving all that traffic, which increases their sales volume. So they say, you know what, we don't need to make a 50% profit margin on this item. We can afford 15, I don't know what it is, because we're just making so many sales. To give another personal story, like, I'm putting together my informational products, my audio CDs and things like that on my website, and I've been talking with someone else who's got a business who's doing the same kind of thing, and I asked, how do you determine the price for your thing? Because we're selling information. There's not a whole lot of manufacturing costs. There's a lot of time and research that went into it, and education and marketing and bandwidth and stuff, but overall, the actual selling of a CD or a digital download isn't that much for you. So how do you determine the price? And this is another way you can don't do all the hard work yourself figuring out your supply and demand curve. Look at what everyone else is selling it at. That's determining the market price.
Right.
So I asked her, it's like, how do you come up with your price? And she said that, you know, she actually hired somebody called a launch coach, which is somebody who specializes in new businesses going online and helps them get their products out there in a big way and make lots of sales.
Wow.
And he kind of coached her through it and gave some great tips. And, like, you know, coming out like a new product, like one of his things was you're supposed to blog about it like 4 times to your readership, you know, to build up anticipation that it's coming and knowing that not everyone is going to read every single blog. So, you know, that's why you're doing it multiple times to kind of reinforce it and make sure you catch everybody. And, like, just a whole list of things to do. And for the product she had come out with, it was like a multi-CD set with a workbook and, like, some other little bonus features thrown in there. And he had recommended for that kind of product, for her established reputation at this point, how many people knew her and all that, she should charge $97 for this product course.
Right.
And she tried it and made a few sales, but just wasn't really seeing the numbers she was hoping for. So she tried lowering the price, like we were talking about, down to $47 for the same product, and sales just jumped like crazy. And she said that even though it's at a much lower profit margin, she's losing $50 profit per item, she said she's making so many sales that she's actually making more profit than when it was at the higher price point. So she just shared that with me, and I'm like, okay, that's good to know. Again, it's just that it's the sales volume, it's the numbers, saying even if you're making less per product, if you're doing more of it, you can make more money.
And that's a very good point, David. I like that. I like these simple ways of being able to figure out what your supply and demand curves are. Well, David, you were telling me a story before about how you were actually figuring out from a customer's perspective, if you want to walk through how that happened with you and what brought up this entire episode.
Right. Well, a buddy of mine, I'll give a shout out to Patrick if he's listening.
That's a shout out.
Yeah, shout out. I've known this guy since first grade. We've been friends that long, so we go way back. And he was my first roommate and all kinds of stuff. And he was down visiting from New Jersey and hadn't seen the guy in years. So he's doing all the tourist stuff here in Florida. And the other night we went out to like a dinner and show kind of thing. It was like themed to like this Al Capone's dinner theater or something or other. It was taking place back in the Prohibition era. And it was great. You know, it was kind of like a buffet food. And they had like some singing, a little bit of dancing, a little bit of a story going on with the characters. And they interact with the waiters and stuff. It was a pretty cool experience. But you go to the website, and right on the front page, there's a coupon, half off. And $24.99. Now, if you don't read it carefully, you think it's half off $24.99. No, the $24.99 is the half-off price. And that's per person, but that includes, you know, the food and the show and everything.
Not bad.
So, yeah, it's fine. You know, it's a tourist town. It's a tourist thing to do. It's pretty cool. We were there for several hours, so, I mean, it was a full event. And so we go there. We use the coupon to get in and all that kind of stuff, and then right in the main entrance, they got a little gift shop. You can get T-shirts and things like that. So they're looking for other ways to drum up some cash. We get in there. At the end of the show, first, when you come in, they take your picture on, like, this wall. Like you know when you get arrested and they have the they take your mugshot? Like, shows your height and everything? Well, they have you do that when you first come in. That's just part of the whole experience. And then at the end of the show, they pass out a little packet that has that picture on it on the front page of a fake newspaper, and they also have like a police report with that photo on there, and they have like a little keychain with that photo. So they got a few different souvenir products you can take home with you. Now we get it at first, I'm like, oh, that's nice, you know, just a little extra souvenir included in the price to go home as a part of your memory. No, not quite. that was something additional you could buy if you wanted. And for the fake newspaper, I think it was like $20.
Whoa.
For the police report, it was like $15. And it's just a little folder with, you know, the police file stats and your picture on it. And the keychains, I think, were like $6 a piece, something like that. So, yeah, my response was very similar to yours, Daniels. I was like, okay, this is cool, but I don't want it that bad. And, I was thinking, it's like, you know, if they were asking a lot less for it, I'd probably buy it. But this was just way too high. The demand was not high enough to meet the supply. And they're wasting all this paper printing this out because they're not going to be able to use it for anything else. And I was talking with my buddy Patrick about it. And I was like, you know, this would be a good topic for the Small Business Podcast, and adjusting prices and demand and all that. And then I thought, but you know, on second thought, who's their audience here? These are tourists. These are people most likely from out of state who are here on vacation for a week. And when you're on vacation, what do? You spend money all over the place. You're in the money-spending mode.
Yes.
And you don't think about, wow, this is a $20 newspaper that just has my picture on it. You think, oh, it's part of my memories of being in Orlando. And memories are worth a lot more than a newspaper with your picture on it. And you don't think about it. You're just in vacation spending mode. So we watched when the servers came around and either took back the souvenirs or if anyone bought it. And I realized, like, you know, even with the high cost of printing all this stuff out just to show you, just to have it in your hands, which, by the way, I think was smart of them. It's a lot harder for people to visualize their picture on a product than to actually hold it in your hands and say, wow, do I want to take this home with me? So even though it is a bit of a waste of paper for all the people who don't buy it, it's a higher printing cost, they probably do convert more sales that way by having it in your hands. And then I was telling my buddy, I was like, hey, maybe the few people who do buy it, they make so much profit on it, it covers all the people who don't. So we watched when everyone came around, and a fair number of people bought something. So more than I was expecting. And again, I guess it goes back to that whole tourist mentality. So despite the higher cost, they actually did pretty well.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's a lot of money, and the part that bothers me is the fact that they have them printed out, and they throw the ones away that don't go their way. And I would think that we need to look at the next episode when we talk about going green. Is that I'm one of the things I'm concerned about.
Right, and hopefully they recycle. I don't know what they do, but
You're absolutely right, David. Don't get me wrong. Who cares if they throw that away? From a business point of view, from the green point of view, it's not exactly great. But from the business point of view, think about how awesome that is. You have a customer who can pick up an item, look at it directly in the eye, and say, this is what I'm getting. And as a business person, that is a very powerful thing. Because I was on a boat on the cruise, they took pictures of everybody, and they put everybody's photos up that they had, and they printed out maybe thousands upon thousands of pictures. And people would walk up there, see themselves in a photo, grab that picture off the wall, and take it right over. And even if you put it in a digital format, it does not do it justice of having something in your hand.
Exactly.
And so I cannot express enough how important it is to just be able to have something in your hand and be able to go ahead and say, here you go.
That's something I learned just in basic sales training, like when I was working in retail. If you can put a product in a customer's hands, they start to emotionally bond to it. The longer they hold on to it, the higher their chance of buying it. So don't be afraid. And in fact, I would another little thing, a little trick for you here. A lot of times, you know, you'll show somebody something, here, check out this product, and you'll hold it for them. And some people will, like, you know, cross their arms, or they'll refuse to grab it because they know that if they hold it, they're more likely to buy it. Well, if you just hold it there in front of them long enough, it'll become an awkward pause, and no one likes to feel that uncomfortable. And if you just hold out, they'll take it out of your hand just to feel comfortable again.
That's right.
And then you do the opposite, and you hold off as long as possible to not to not take it out of their hands. So, yeah, if they can touch it and see it, and just if the more real it becomes to them, the more likely they are to close a sale on it.
And look how nice that is. But where this comes from my point of view, is just like I was saying, is that it was a matter of finding out how much something is worth. And so you were pointing out how if it was just a little bit cheaper. So if there was some way to barter on that, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, they did offer like a package deal at this place, like, you know, get the newspaper, the keychains, and the police report for like a discounted value.
That's like never worth it. I just want to have
30
the photo
bucks for the whole
that
thing
amount.
Or something. So, but yeah, I guess they knew their customers. They knew we're dealing with tourists. They want souvenirs, and they're used to just spending money in hotels and eating out every day and everything else. And we gave them a great show, and this is part of the memory.
Oh yes. So nice to be a tourist. And that was something I ran into when we were on the trip. It's like, hey, let's do this. We're on vacation. What a dangerous phrase, right?
Exactly.
The once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Well, mine came in when I wanted to go to a certain video game place we have down here at Downtown Disney. And they moved from when I first went to this place from $25. They're now for a day to go there. It's $40, I think maybe upwards plus now that they increased the rates down there. And just think about how much of a difference that is on the supply-demand curve. Before, my brother, myself, and a friend of my brother's could go there for a day for less than $75. Now, for the three of us, we're doing $120. And that's a significant difference. And so instead of us going anymore, we don't go. And so now it's all relegated to tourists, which is kind of disappointing. But with that, David, I think we need to go ahead and wrap up the show because we have reached our 29-minute mark.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and bring it on home.
Sounds good.
So you've been listening to the Small Business Podcast covering economics and how to set your price using supply and demand curves. If you'd like to learn more, you can go to wikipedia.com and look at supply and demand and economics. If you'd like to go ahead and become our friends on MySpace, you can do so by going to myspace.com/smallpodcast. If you'd like to subscribe to our Small Business Podcast, you can go to smallpod.blogspot.com. That stands for Small Business Podcast. So it's smallpod, and it's at a blogspot site. So that's .blogspot, and then it's a .com, because we're hopefully going to try and make money sometime in the future, right? Otherwise, we'd make this a .org.
I love your strong, confident, clear, focused words. Hopefully, maybe someday.
We can figure something out. I just like doing the show.
Totally.
This was a fun thing. So we will figure out how to make money at a later time. Right now, we're just having a good time providing everybody else the insights and information that we have.
Oh, we're building.
And if you'd like to email us, you can do so by emailing us at smallbusinesspodcast@gmail.com. If you have any show tips, show ideas, if you'd like to just rant and rave about how good-looking we are, you can do so there. If you'd like to go ahead and check out our Facebook pages, because we are hip and we know where our customers are, you can go to facebook.com and search for
The Small Business Podcast.
I want everybody to realize that there's a recurring theme here, that this is The Small Business Podcast. If you'd like to go ahead and reach us on Twitter, because that's the latest demand supply thing, you can do so by going to twitter.com/smallpodcast. I like how you say that with such confidence, David. We'll make it happen. So, for this week, what would you like to go ahead and talk about, David?
All my business is focusing on spiritualsmarts.com right now.
Very nice program. So you can go to spiritualsmarts.com and you can see what David looks like. And if you don't think he's very attractive, don't write him, because he can't use that kind of devastation.
But if you think he's
a good-looking guy, go ahead and write him and tell him, hey, David, I think you're a good-looking guy. And if you'd like to go ahead and look at what I look like, you can go to rangerpaint.com. And if you have some comments about that, you can always email me. But check out rangerpaint.com if you want to have the best in tire painting needs. So until next week, this is Daniel.
And I'm David.
Have a good week.
And thank you for listening.